Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
No matter what we choose to believe, there's no God who condones taking the life of an innocent human being.
Where I think we are in the culture, but also with religious institutions, is that people have stopped hating us, that is to say LGBT people, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us. That's the next big work to do.
Maybe it's something as simple as you whistle while you work.
Just whistle while you work.
Mega churches are a house of cards. Mega churches really are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, so insubstantial, so unsatisfying.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, love issues, etc.
Is it true that everybody believes in evolution? Is it true that, well, if not everybody, every smart person out there, every thinking person believes in evolution? I've heard it from listeners to this program. We'll do a show on creation or debunking Darwinian evolution, and they'll write me or they'll leave something on the comment line, and they'll say, you know, you're an otherwise very intelligent guy. I don't understand why you buy into this biblical view of creation. It's an interesting way of thinking about it. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about the campaign to convince Christians to accept neo-Darwinism. Casey Luskin will be our guest a little bit later. Terry Mattingly will join us. We'll talk about poll results on the faith of President Obama. They're all mixed up. They're changing a little bit. We'll see what Terry thinks about that in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Casey Luskin is a research coordinator for the Discovery Institute, co-author of the new book Science and Human Origins, and he's written an article in the latest Christian research journal titled The Campaign to Embarrass Christians into Accepting Darwinism. Casey, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
You talk about the Darwin lobby trying to pressure Christians into accepting neo-Darwinism. Is there a larger goal than simply that?
Well, a big part of the Darwin Lobby's goal is to influence public education and to actually censor from students any scientific evidence that would challenge evolution in public schools. And they would extend this goal not just to public schools, but really to higher education, to private schools. If they had their way, they would like to see students everywhere learning the Darwinian viewpoint and only the Darwinian viewpoint in public schools. So that's certainly part of their goal. But yeah, I think their ultimate goal really is to see that the percentage of Americans that accepts Darwinian evolution is as close to 100% as they can possibly get it. That's what they want. Now, of course, there are a lot of folks in the Darwin lobby that would call themselves atheists who believe that by promoting evolution, you're sort of naturally destroying religion from the inside out. And so they certainly are very happy if along the way, by promoting evolution, you're sort of diminishing the influence of religion in society. There's certainly some folks like that in the Darwin lobby as well.
So what do you mean by that term? Be more specific when you use the term Darwin lobby.
Sure. Well, the Darwin Lobby is a group that some of us folks in the ID movement have come to affectionately know as a collection of activists, which includes some scientists, some educators, in some cases even some theologians, who are out there trying to push Darwinian evolution on the public. The media certainly gets involved in the Darwin Lobby's campaigns, but certainly it's primarily a collection of sort of scientist activists who are out there trying to push evolution on the public.
How did they diagnose the problem? What do they say?
Well, the Darwin Lobby looks at the percentage of Americans that accept Darwinian evolution. And they see that, for example, you look at certain Gallup polls, and they'll say that only maybe 16% of the public accepts that that humans evolved from ape-like creatures without any influence from a divine being. Or they'll see that, you know, some 35% of the public accepts evolution, but they still believe that God guided it. And maybe that's sort of an evolutionary view. But then they'll see that some 40 to 50% of the public book believes that God created humans essentially in their present form. Well, they cannot tolerate those kind of statistics, that basically, you know, 40 to 50% of the American public disagrees with an evolutionary viewpoint. And then they look across the pond at Europe and they see that basically, you know, somewhere, you know, very high percentages of the public over there accepts evolution. And so they're sort of embarrassed. They feel that the American public is almost embarrassing compared to the European counterparts, that basically you've got very low percentages of Americans that accept evolution, and they want to rectify this embarrassing state of affairs so that when they go visit their friends over in Europe, they don't have to feel so, you know, ashamed of the fact that so many Americans, so few Americans accept Darwinian evolution. And so they're out there on these campaigns. They're working with the media, they're working with television companies, they're working with school boards, they're working with science educator groups, all to try to promote evolution of the public. And you mentioned a second ago, who is the Darwin Lobby? I should probably mention this. There is one group out there, an organization that's probably the de facto head of the Darwin Lobby, and they're called the National Center for Science Education. They're based in Oakland or Berkeley, California, and they really do a lot of coordinating with a lot of these different groups in the media, in the scientific community, to try to coordinate their efforts to promote evolution.
Now, you also point out that the religious constituents of the Darwin Lobby actually think that they're going to make the religious faith kind of more respectable by pushing neo-Darwinism. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think people should be aware, especially if you have listeners that are religious or Christians, I mean, they should be aware that there is a campaign right now to try to essentially push evolution on Christians and turn them into theistic evolutionists who accept both, you know, religion and Darwinian evolution. And this campaign has support from some of the highest echelons of the scientific community. The National Academy of Sciences has even got involved in this campaign to try to promote the view that religion and evolution are fully compatible. There is no tension in believing that God created life by guiding an unguided process like Darwinian evolution. And so, yeah, there are some folks in the Darwin Lobby who themselves are religious. And, you know, we can speculate all day about what their motives are. I think for a lot of them, again, it's sort of embarrassment. They're embarrassed that many people in the church don't accept Darwinian evolution, and they want to try to make the church more, quote-unquote, respectable to the world, basically, by increasing the percentage of Christians who accept Darwinian evolution. Now, a lot of times what the religious people in the Darwin Lobby will do is they will gloss over some of the tensions that are inherent in believing in both God and evolution, and they will certainly never talk to their fellow Christians about the fact that there are credible scientists who dissent from Darwinian evolution, and that there are actually many religious scientists who are very well qualified that doubt Darwinian evolution. They'll only put forward those scientists who accept evolution, try to promote this view to Christians in the public that really, if you're a credible scientist, that guarantees, that dictates that you must accept evolution, and that's simply not true. They won't tell people about the fact that there are credible scientists who doubt Darwinian evolution. So they have sort of the same agenda as the Darwin Lobby, but they're really working inside the church, whereas the Darwin Lobby is looking at the public as a whole.
We've used the term neo-Darwinism. Why is that prefix important here?
Well, neo-Darwinism is the leading paradigm of evolutionary biology in biology today. Basically, if you understand Darwin's theory is that natural selection acting upon random variation is the driving force that built all of the living organisms and the various species that we see on Earth today. Now, in Darwin's day, he didn't know where the variation came from. And, of course, we've now discovered DNA and modern genetics, and we understand that variation comes from mutations in the DNA. Now, of course, in our experience, most of the time, mutations are harmful or do nothing. It's actually extremely rare that we see a mutation that actually does something beneficial. But neo-Darwinism is basically the modern version of Darwin's theory, which still relies on natural selection, but it says that random mutations in our DNA are what produce the variation. So basically, neo-Darwinism says that there is an unguided process of blind natural selection acting upon random mutations, and this is what built the complexity of life that we see today. And of course, there are many scientists out there who dissent from that view. You won't learn about this if you just listen to the Darwin Lobby, but over 800 PhD scientists have signed a list stating that they are skeptical of the ability of random mutation and natural selection to produce the complexity of life. So basically, they are skeptical of neo-Darwinism. And you can find that list at the website dissentfromdarwinism.org. So the bottom line is there are plenty of scientific critics of neo-Darwinism in the scientific community today. It's just you won't hear about them, you know, if you listen to what the Darwin Lobby has to say.
So neo-Darwinism is essentially Darwinism that's been updated with our knowledge of DNA and how it works.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Todd.
All right. Let's talk about a book that you address early in your article. Just give us a brief introduction to this book by Stevens and Gilbertson, The Anointed.
Sure. Well, it's a book that was published by Harvard University Press last year, and the subtitle is Evangelical Truth in a Secular Age. So what they're trying to say is that basically evangelical Christians, as they say in the book, that they've isolated themselves from the academic culture in America today. And they basically try to cast evangelical scholars as quote-unquote amateur or, quote, out of touch with their putative fields. Or they say that evangelicals have a, quote, tortured relationship with modern science, and that we're stuck in quote-unquote intellectual isolation. So you can kind of get the feel here. Their basic argument is that evangelical Christians today are out of touch with modern, you know, academic thinking, and they really are a bunch of amateur, ignorant people who don't really understand, you know, what modern thinking is all about. And they try to portray this stereotype in a number of different areas, including the debate over origins and evolution. They look at psychology and family counseling. They look at American history, and they look at also sort of a lot of the folks who are talking about end time stuff today, trying to cast them as just sort of weird and bizarre. And, you know, I think that anybody who pays attention to the church will acknowledge, yeah, there are some folks out there that are promoting some pretty wacky ideas, but I think this book is basically one long attempt to cherry pick only the most extreme or bizarre examples in the church to try to promote a stereotype that claims that evangelical thinking is really quite bizarre.
Let's take a break. When we come back, Casey Luskin is our guest. We're going to continue to talk about the campaign to convince Christians to accept neo-Darwinism. Doesn't sound like arguments to me. It just sounds like calling evangelicals dumb. We'll talk about that after this.
Over summer, 2.5 months of what a child learned in school can leak away. Call Sylvan to turn summer learning loss into a gain. Sylvan pinpoints exactly what skills your child needs in just 3 hours a week over 12 weeks. You'll see results in your child's math or reading performance improving one grade level guaranteed. Demonstrated through the pre and post assessment. So call now. At participating locations only. Some restrictions may apply. Call for complete guarantee details.
Sylvan Learning Center of Shiloh, 618-628-0018. 628-0018.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, talking with Casey Luskin of the Discovery Institute about a campaign to convince Christians to accept neo-Darwinism. Before the break, Casey, you were talking about the book Anointed, and it doesn't sound like there are a lot of arguments in there for neo-Darwinism. That is, what in the world does it matter that there are kooky Christians out there? Does it matter that there are crazy evangelicals who teach all sorts of things? How does that bear upon the truth of Darwinism? And strikes me as just another way of calling evangelicals stupid or out of touch. That isn't an argument for neo-Darwinism, is it?
You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, as I said in my article, it's basically one long ad hominem argument. It's one long argument trying to characterize these people as ignorant, unsophisticated, out of touch, you know, intellectually isolated. It's attacking the messenger rather than the message. Now, they do have some, you know, substantive arguments, but when it comes to evolution, they really don't have any, I would say, scientific rebuttals in this particular book. I mean, Guybrandsen has written other books where he writes about the science, but this book has virtually no science whatsoever. It's simply a long string of trying to cherry-pick facts that try to paint, you know, basically non-evolutionary scientists or people who doubt evolution, trying to paint them as ignorant or stupid. One of the best examples of this comes in the opening pages of the book, where they talk about some debates that took place before the Texas State Board of Education in 2009, when the Texas State Board was debating about whether they were going to teach students about both the evidence for and against evolution, or just teach the evidence for evolution. And they quote the chair of the Texas State Board at that time, Don McElroy, saying that he said, "I disagree with these experts." And the upshot, what they're trying to say is that, well, he disagrees with these quote-unquote experts, and therefore he's going to just impose his young earth creationist views, as they discuss in the book, upon Texas students. Well, I can tell you, I sat through those hearings in Texas in 2009, and Carl Guybrandsen and Randall Stevens are trying to rewrite history of what actually happened. First of all, Don McElroy, who was the chair of the Texas State Board, yes, he is a young earth creationist, but he made it very clear in the hearings that he was not trying to have young earth creationism taught. What he wanted students to learn about was credible scientific evidence for and against Darwinian evolution, and not bringing in anything like alternative views like creationism or even intelligent design, which is different from creationism. He simply wanted the pros and the cons of evolution taught. The other thing they don't talk about in this book is that when Don McElroy said, "I disagree with these experts," there were also some experts that he did agree with, and namely a number of PhD scientists that testified before the Texas State Board of Education that there are scientific problems with Darwinian evolution that students deserve to know about. And so this book, the Anointed, this book basically omits the fact that there were plenty of credible scientists who testified before the Texas State Board and actually presented over 100 mainstream scientific papers that talked about scientific weaknesses in evolution and Darwinian theory today. And so there was plenty of science presented to the board that challenged evolution, and that McElroy was saying also that he agreed with those other experts that were there and testified, and he thought that their views should be included as well. The bottom line is that Don McElroy's position is very important to understand. He thought that students should learn about the experts who both support evolution and also the experts who don't support Darwinian evolution, that students should hear about different scientific views. But folks in the Darwin lobby, they take a different approach. They think students should only hear about one scientific viewpoint, and that's the pro-Darwin view only, and that any of the scientific views that would challenge Darwinian evolution, even if they're held by credible experts, those should be censored from students. And so I think that this, the opening pages of this book, although you won't know about it if you just read the book, it presents only one side of the issue. It's really a microcosm of this whole debate, that they are trying to present the pro-Darwin only view and censoring from students and the public the fact that there is credible scientific dissent from that view. And so this book in and of itself is kind of a microcosm of what goes on in the debate and what was going on in Texas in 2009. So it's very interesting to see how they try to rewrite history to try to paint the Darwin skeptics as ignorant or sort of closed-minded when really the exact opposite was true.
You also say there's a framing strategy employed in the book, and that is to kind of speak only of those scholars that affirm Darwinian evolution as though they are the entire corpus of credible scholarship. Talk about that.
Oh, yeah, you definitely see this strategy at work. In this book, in the debate as a whole, you see it all over the place where, you know, they will showcase, well, this PhD scientist from Cornell University or from, you know, University of Texas, they are, you know, evolutionary scientists. They're given all of the good qualities. They're portrayed as intellectual, as in touch with, you know, the culture, as chic, as hip, and that's fine. I mean, I have no problem with folks portraying evolutionary scientists and explaining their views to the public. But what they don't do is they don't tell their readers that there are also scientists who are skeptical of Darwinian evolution that are equally credible. And so when you have a situation like this where you have credible scientists on both sides, you can't just rely on appeals to authority. And that's basically what this book is doing. It's making an appeal to authority. It doesn't even really talk about the evidence, but it just says, you know, these are the people with the PhDs, therefore you have to believe what they have to say. When in reality there are credible PhDs on both sides of this debate, they just aren't telling their readers about that fact. Normally, though, when you have a situation like this, when you have credible people on both sides of the debate, you can't use an appeal to authority to settle that debate. You have to go and look at the evidence. You have to actually investigate what the data says and let people make up their own minds. And I think that that's exactly what these authors don't want people doing. They don't want people making up their own minds. They want them to just capitulate to who they present as the ultimate authorities, which would be the evolutionary scientists.
Let's talk about some of what you call misguided reasons for accepting evolution. I hear it quite often from listeners to this program who object to a position of a young Earth or a six-day creation. One of them is God could have used evolution. Why is this a misguided reason for accepting evolution?
Sure, and you know, it's a very common point that I hear as well. And the argument basically is, well, if God could have used evolution, then that settles the issue. Well, I'm not really interested in what God could or couldn't have done. God is God. He can do whatever he wants, in my opinion. I'm interested in what does the evidence say. If you're a Christian, you might say what God did do, not what he could have done, but what actually happened. And you can answer this question scientifically by looking at the scientific evidence and asking, does it support Darwinian evolution, or is there, you know, better evidence for something else? In my personal experience, I think that something else would be intelligent design, which is a credible scientific alternative to Darwinian evolution. So yeah, just saying if God could have used evolution, then that settles the debate. That's really inadequate because you have to go and look at the evidence to ask, well, what does the evidence say? And really, you know, address it on a scientific level, not just asking what God could have done. God can do whatever he wants.
How would you respond to someone who says, well, what the real problem here is that science deals with facts and evidence and religion deals with faith and things that cannot be measured or seen. And they're really dealing with two entirely different realms.
Yeah, that's another common argument you hear. And basically it's from folks who want to kind of sweep any of the tensions between religion and Darwinian evolution under the rug. And they want to say, look, Darwinian evolution is science. Science deals with nothing but facts and objectively testable, you know, scientific knowledge, whereas religion deals with sort of fuzzy things like belief in God or morality or ice cream flavors, you know, those kinds of things. And these are two totally separate realms of human knowledge and human experience. They don't interact. Therefore, you know, whatever science does cannot possibly conflict with religion, and a religion can have nothing to say that could ever influence, you know, scientific thinking. And the problem with this sort of separate realms view of science and religion is that it fails to accurately describe both science and religion. The truth, and it's very easy to see this, is that religion often makes testable claims about reality, which could, you know, get into scientific claims. For example, Christianity claims that as a historical fact that Jesus rose from the dead. Okay, fine. Whether you believe that or not, that's a historical claim. That's actually a testable claim. If you were there at that time, you could have been an eyewitness to this claim. So, you know, these kinds of claims are not simply in the realm of, you know, fantasy or ice cream flavors or morality or whatever you want to call it. These are, you know, either objectively true or objectively false historical claims. So it's wrong to claim that religion never makes, you know, scientifically testable claims about the real world. Another problem is that it fails to note that science sometimes makes claims which tread upon religion. And science will often make claims about how life arose, and or the age of the Earth. And, you know, I happen to personally be an old earther, but for some people who take particular interpretations of the Bible, which says that the Earth is only 10,000 or so years old, well, now science is certainly treading upon that particular religious belief or that particular interpretation of Genesis. So there's no question that sometimes science can make claims that overlap with those of religion. So the problem here is that this whole, that we call it the non-overlapping magisteria model of science and religion, that they don't overlap in their claims. This non-overlapping model is simply not correct. It's a false description of both science and religion. What's interesting is that some folks who promote this model of science and religion have admitted that it is wrong, that they use it simply as a tool to sort of shut down objections to evolution, gain the trust of students, and promote evolution to the public or to students. And so I think we see that this model of science and religion, that they are strictly, that they speak to strictly separate realms, really it's more of a rhetorical strategy or a tactic that it's used to sort of get people who have religious objections to evolution to shut up, and so therefore only science can have a say. And that's why I think that Philip Johnson was so right when he said that this model of science and religion, this separate but equal model of science and religion, is sort of separate but equal in the apartheid tradition. And I think he's absolutely right, because the whole goal is to get religion to shut up so that only, you know, essentially science, quote-unquote science, is the only man left standing.
Casey Luskin is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk more with him about a campaign to convince Christians to accept neo-Darwinism. Then Terry Mattingly will be our guest. We're going to talk with him about poll results. They continue to change in odd ways about the faith of President Obama. Terry Mattingly in about 5 minutes on the other side of the break. Casey Luskin is research coordinator for the Discovery Institute and co-author of the new book, Science and Human Origins. We'll be right back. Thanks for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. through the charitable grant program Thrive and Choice. We received more than $15,000 last year through Thrive and Choice. Our goal this year is to raise more than $20,000 through Thrive and Choice. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio, look for the Thrivent logo under the donate page at issuesetc.org. Please support Issues Etc. in 2012 with Thrivent Choice.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
More Americans reject the label pro-choice.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The number of Americans identifying themselves as pro-choice has hit a record low of 41%. Those willing to call themselves pro-life stands at 50%, according to a new Gallup poll. When Gallup first began polling on the question in 1995, 56% of Americans identified as pro-choice, with only 33% taking the label pro-life. Of course, pro-life advocates welcome the news. Christy Hamrick of Americans United for Life noted, "There is a growing uneasiness across America regarding the abortion mandate in the health care law. Americans value life, and this poll reflects that."
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Casey Luskin is our guest. We're talking about a campaign to convince Christians to accept neo-Darwinism. Casey, before the break, you outlined several arguments that are not good arguments to accept theistic evolution or Darwinism. What about the argument that because one's belief in evolution, some would say, is supposedly irrelevant to salvation, that it's a secondary question and it's, well, in essence, not worth arguing about?
Sure. And we're hearing this argument more and more from folks, even in the Christian community among apologists, who are saying, well, look, strictly speaking, to be a Christian, all you need to believe is that, you know, Jesus Christ died for your sins and rose from the grave, and this is basically, you know, the essence of Christianity. And what you believe about evolution is really irrelevant to that. And, you know, that's a true statement. I agree with that statement. I personally am a Christian. I agree that your belief about evolution is sort of a secondary matter to being a Christian. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that Darwinian evolution is theologically inert or that it's an unimportant matter. You could have something that's not a secondary matter, but is still an important matter to, you know, many of these theological questions. And the bottom line is that Darwinian evolution claims that life arose by an unguided process. And so, you know, you might be able to find ways, mental gymnastics essentially, to reconcile how God could guide an unguided process to create life, but you can't deny the fact that there's some tensions there that have to be resolved. And one of the points I make in the article is that if Darwinian evolution really is so theologically inert, and if it is really just, you know, theologically irrelevant, then why do so many atheists cite Darwinian evolution as a reason for abandoning faith? You have to answer that question. If you think that, you know, Darwinian evolution really is irrelevant to the choices people make about what they're going to believe, I mean, you could go down the list and you could spend hundreds of pages of quotes from evolutionary scientists who are attacking religion or people who have cited Darwinian evolution as a reason for abandoning faith. You know, it's no coincidence, I think, that the world's most famous atheist, Richard Dawkins, is also the world's most famous evolutionary biologist, or that the woman who's basically the de facto head of the Darwin lobby, an anthropologist named Eugenie Scott, that she's also a signer of the Third Humanist Manifesto. So there's all kinds of connections and crossover between the leading proponents of evolution and some of the leading lights of the new atheist movement and the Darwin lobby as well. And I think that you have to, you know, you have to grapple with that fact if you're going to claim that Darwinian evolution is completely irrelevant to you know, what one believes about faith.
With only about 2 minutes here, Casey, is this campaign to convince Christians to accept neo-Darwinism, is it succeeding?
You know, I actually think it's not succeeding, and it's interesting because at the end of my article, I talk about some Gallup polls that have measured the percent of the public that accepts both evolution and religion, because this is their real goal. They recognize that the vast majority of the American public is religious. They claim, at least, that they aren't trying to get people to stop believing in religion. They just want them to start believing in evolution. I don't know if that's true for all of the people in the Darwin lobby. This is what they say, so we'll take it at face value. So what I talked about in my article is that over the last 25 or 30 years or so, the percentage of Americans who accept both God and evolution has remained about the same. But it's interesting because just about a month ago, and this was after I'd already submitted my article for publication, a new Gallup poll came out which showed that the percent of the public that believes that in both God and evolution has actually hit an all-time low. It's dropped from 38% to 32% of the American public just over the last couple years. So that's a non-trivial drop, and it's a statistically significant drop in the percentage of Americans who accept both God and evolution. And so I think it's interesting to see that this campaign, despite all of the efforts that is being poured and the money that's being poured in, even by the scientific community in some cases, to promote evolution to the public, really the percentage of Americans that accept evolution is actually going down. So I think that this campaign is not being successful. awful. And I think it's because most Americans like to think for themselves. They look at the evidence. They're not going to be bullied into a particular view. So, you know, as long as Americans are thinking for themselves, they're not going to be bullied by these appeals to authority or these ad hominem arguments. And I think that's why you see the percentage of Americans that accept evolution is not going up.
Casey Luskin is a research coordinator for the Discovery Institute, co-author of the new book, Science and Human Origins. He's also written an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled The Campaign to Embarrass Christians into Accepting Darwinism. You'll find a link to the Discovery Institute and to the book Science and Human Origins at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Casey, thanks for being our guest.
Well, thanks for having me.